Welcome to another edition of The List, a Write Fiction podcast. We've got a psychedelic show for you all today about our favorite psychedelic albums. Before we get started, if you love the pod, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your listening app. It helps us reach new listeners like you. Also, be sure to check out our website, www.writefiction.com, where you can find the Spotify playlist with all our picks that we mentioned in the pod. Now, let's get to it. Psychedelic music started in the 1960s and coincided with the rise in use of psychedelic drugs such as LSD and mushrooms, which facilitated visual and auditory hallucinations. These two forces were so intertwined that a young band called the Warlocks played a key role at the acid test events happening in the mid-60s in San Francisco that really helped popularize LSD use across the country. And of course, that band eventually changed its name to The Grateful Dead. In fact, Owsley Stanley, who established the first major underground LSD factory and who was called the Acid King, became The Grateful Dead's financial backer, renting them a house and buying them sound equipment. So yes, psychedelic music and psychedelic drugs go hand in hand. But do they have to? Is the music good on its own merits? I mean, can we just listen to psychedelic music without the drugs and truly enjoy it, while not necessarily listening to it as it was originally intended to be heard? Well, I don't know. But on today's pod, we'll explore these questions and more as we share with you our favorite psychedelic albums and why we love them. So with that, I'm introducing the fellas. Adam, how are you?
Dude, sometimes with your introductions, it's like you're like, it feels like you like came from a different planet, and then you're like, hey, psychedelic music. Some people have heard of this. I'm just, I wonder if you were raised in a mine shaft in Wilkes-Barre or something.
Yeah.
Deep in the mines.
It was more like a black shaft full of all black people.
The soul, the neo soul, and the neo soul, and a little bit of success. Yeah. Jazz.
All the different kinds of soul. You know what I'm saying?
Watch your mouth.
Yeah. Anyway, we got Freddie here. Well, and we got Brendan here.
Hey.
What's going on, gents?
Yo.
Nothing. Brendan, you okay there, buddy?
What's going on? I got a cement mixer behind my house. So if you hear any funny sounds, just
okay.
Me. Not me.
It's not you. Okay.
It's not you. Blame it on
duly noted. I thought you were trying to make this pod a little more psychedelic with the random boom noises in the background. All right. What have you guys been up to?
I wanted to bring up, I'm currently getting one of my keyboards repaired. I have one of my synths in the shop. And with the topic of our episode, did you guys hear about it? It was like 2 years ago. There was a guy repairing an old keyboard from like the 60s. And he was like taking it apart and fixing it, and there was LSD still on the instrument. He actually started tripping because it can be absorbed through the skin.
Wow. I did hear about
Never
that.
Heard that.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I couldn't help but think of that because that was
really good acid if it's still working.
Urban yeah, legend right? Or real thing?
Oh no, it happened. There were several. It was covered on several outlets.
Oh wow.
Yeah, totally. Oh,
crazy.
So yeah. You can only imagine. I've opened up some of my, I have some synthesizers, none that old, but can only imagine what's under the hood of some of them.
Yeah. So if you ever start playing on a gig or in a studio, you start, tripping.
Right.
Well, no.
Or, yeah, I was hoping it didn't happen to Logan when we were working with him. If he's like playing and then all of a sudden he's just looking down at his hands and he goes off into another dimension.
Well, yeah. I'm sure it'll be beautiful. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a beautiful dimension.
Right.
I can't even imagine how. I mean, I know people have talked about performing while under the influence of LSD. I can't even imagine how that's possible. I'll just leave it at that without divulging too much.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not naming any names, but yeah, I've played with a few folks that have indulged on some things of nature, and I didn't know how it happened, and luckily I was hopped up on a lot of Red Bull. So
I don't know if you're remembering those things correctly either. I think you were kind of partaking as well, from what I recall.
Yes, in Red Bull.
In Red Bull, yeah.
Vodka. You had a couple different Red Bulls. Yep, that's for sure. You
definitely and maybe a little yeast.
Psychedelic Red Bull, yeah.
Yeah. So the point is that from all that conversation is we are versed in some forms of fashion of this psychedelia topic we are embarking on here today. And yeah, I guess with that, what do you say we get into it, guys?
Yeah.
Okie dokie.
All right, cool. Well, Blonde Selick, aka the podiatrist, aka Adam, why don't you take us there first?
All right. Psychedelic. Yeah, I lot to choose from in this one. There's we'll get into it, like, you know, there was a time when it started, but it's stuck around. Well, to no further ado, my number three from 1968 is the great Robert Wyatt and the Soft Machine, their first album. Really, really psychedelic, unique, great for the Brit psychedelic scene, which is a miniature theme of my choices here. Number two, we go to Australia, not quite Britain, but to the year 2017, and for King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard's Flying Microtonal Banana.
Interesting.
It's a really, really, really neat, really neat album, and you know, for the music nerds, the the microtonal guitar and everything is really cool. And then my number one is from back to year 1968, back to British psychedelia. We go with the Ogden's Nut Gone Flake by Small Faces.
Nice.
Would become the Faces with a few lineup changes after this one, but this is a whimsical, psychedelic, thematic journey that I really enjoy. So those are my three.
Yeah. I was listening to this, that Small Face as well. It's like, man, that don't sound anything like Rod Stewart.
Rod and Ronnie weren't there yet. They came after yeah. this. And Ronnie Lane stuck around and took a back seat to Rod the Bod.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's very interesting. Very interesting.
It's an interesting piece of history with the Faces, Small Faces thing. It's kind of
definitely interesting. Freddie, Betty, yeah, what do you got for your top three picks, buddy?
Okay, my number three pick is 1968's "Anthem of the Sun" by Grateful Dead. Every leaf was turning to watch him die. Oddly enough, I became aware of this album through a friend of mine's parents had this record, but they weren't like normal parents. Like his mom was the sister of Jerry Ragavoy, great R&B songwriter, producer, wrote "Piece of My Heart," "Time Is on Your Side." Their record, and she was a dancer. Their record collection was just amazing. So that was the house that we all hung at. But that's why I first became aware of the Grateful Dead through that album. My number two pick is a group I wasn't really aware of at the time. Is the Psychedelic Sounds of the 13th Floor Elevators, 1966. By the 13th Floor Elevators. They never really achieved quote-unquote mainstream success. I think they were definitely pioneers in the psychedelia and Roki Erickson, lead songwriter, whatever, actually became a casualty of the times. A number one pick is 1967 Incense and Peppermints by the Strawberry Alarm Clock. Everything about this record kind of sums up the times.
Pretty much.
To me. And it's, you know, I just remember hearing this as a kid and like going, well, yeah, I guess that's what psychedelia is. You know, it's just kind of self-explanatory.
Right.
That's my number one pick.
Sure is. I was listening to that on the Spotify playlist and I was like, man, am I... Did I touch a keyboard that has some stuff on it?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very cool record. Let's go. Meta, Patty, McGeehan, what do you got for your top three, buddy?
My number three is a newer band called Washed Out. Their 2009 record, Life of Leisure. Very enjoyable. My number two is a very cool compilation. It's called Brazilian Guitar Fuzz Bananas. Now this was released in 2010, but all the music is of the era. It's of the era. It's between like 67 and 72, 73, something like that. And I have this on vinyl, and it's delightful. And my number one is Tame Impala 2012, Lonerism. There it is.
Very cool records, buddy. Very cool records. And you always throwing the curveballs out there, and I appreciate that about you.
Am I gunning for a new nickname?
Curveball? Well, that doesn't make any sense. That makes less sense.
Okay, corn teeth.
That's me, I guess. So I'm Aaron Brown, the John Stockton of this podcast, aka Corn Teeth. And my top three picks are, I'm going to go very, conventional for my psychedelia pick. I'm going to go with 1968's album titled Head, by the deep cut band called The Monkees.
Very obscure.
I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They did do, you know,
not
play
this
on
album, though.
A TV show at one point in time. I used to love that TV show. But this album is like, it doesn't fit with the TV show at all, except for maybe like one song at the end called Daddy's Song, which is a Harry Nilsson song. And it's a trip. It's a pure trip. Yep. So that's my number three. And my number two is, of course, Gree Gree, 1968, Dr. John. La 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 John. And this is when Dr. John stepped out and kind of, you know, explored that his New Orleans roots and all the, you know, the voodoo and all that stuff. And amazing album. I've always hated this album for a long time, but recently I like it now. I don't know why. Well, I do know why, actually. Maybe I'll get to it later. And my number one album, just discovered it, 1969. Gal Costa. Namorinho de portão, biscoito, café, meu primo e o meu irmão. Conheço esta onda, vou saltar da canoa. Já vi. That's the name of the artist and the album. And it's amazing. She's a Brazilian singer, and she was part of the Tropicália movement, which I've just learned about, and it's fascinating stuff. And so that's my number one psychedelic album. And with that, we're going to take a short break and come back with a lot more discussion. Hold on. And we are back. And so, you know, these picks are quite interesting, all of our picks, and a little bit different from different times and everything. But I kind of want to dig a little bit more into how we actually pick them. Like, what is it? What does that actually mean? Like, how do we get to those picks? And I want to go to you, Adam, first, because actually you mentioned like microtonal guitar. What is that?
It's a guitar that is... it has more frets, so it's going by quarter tones. So there's a how would I best put it? It's a custom made guitar that they used on it, adding additional frets, and that's when you kind of get that Eastern kind of sound to it.
So things sound like sharp or flat. Is that kind of
you're just digging more in between the notes? So you're it almost sounds like it's like. It's almost like a keyboard, like, you know, detuning. It's ever so subtle.
Have you ever played with a guitar like that?
I have not. It would be really cool to check out. I don't even know. I wouldn't really know where to, you know, how to begin with it. Here's just the saying where the quarter tone tuning is where an octave is divided into 24 logarithmically equal distanced quarter tones. It was originally conceived to play on a baglama, which is an Eastern instrument. So they used a lot of microtonal instruments to try to kind of give it that Eastern vibe. And that's kind of what King Gizzard, I think they put out 7 albums in 2017. So
albums.
They had a prolific year. They had, they still put out a couple a year, and they're all different genres up and up and down, but like, some are a little heavier, some are a little more lighter, I guess you could say. But like this one is psychedelic. So I'm like, this is, you know, like King Gizzard is kind of an important, more modern band. So I'm like, I mean, and we haven't been brought up. Like, and that's kind of the root of where most of my choices come from is like, when was I going to be able to talk about the Soft Machine? Or like, when, I mean, and, you know, we can talk about the Faces or the more thing, but Small Faces kind of had, this was like their big moment in the sun there. And so psychedelia was like the perfect moment to, like, you know, bring these to light, because this is all about putting more pieces to the our big puzzle, because you look at all these podcasts and we got like we covered a ton of ground, and this is what podcast 41, you know, and we're not really circling back all that much yet, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And so is King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, is that a big band? Because I've actually never heard of them, so I'm kind of showing my ignorance. Have you guys heard them?
I've heard of them. The Australian band.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's cool. They're not like mega huge. You know, they're not like Tame Impala, Australia huge. But I mean, they have their devout following, and their prolificness, kind of is kind of one of their not quite a shtick, but you know, they really crank out the albums.
Okay. All right, Brandon, what about you, man? Like, so you're the guy that comes in with, I thought everything that we would come in with would be from like 1967 or 8 or 9. And of course, you come out with the 2012 album and the 2009 album, which is kind of like that hit, that Life of Leisure album. Sounds to me a little bit more like electronic-y, like you were like on an Ibiza, Ibiza? Yeah. You're just out there on the beat like, hey man, what are you doing? Is that so? Like, how'd you come to these albums, man?
This is a great topic, and I love this genre of music. So for me, I just kind of went with the first three that came to mind. And so the reason I picked Washed Out was because I saw them at Union Transfer in Philly in, I want to say 2019, and they put on visually one of the best shows I've ever seen. And if you want to talk about the visual part of the psychedelic movement, psychedelic music, it's really critical. And so for bands playing nowadays, you better have your light show, you better have your backgrounds and your projections on point. And these guys were great. It was a trio, and they had cameras on each of them on stage. So they would project onto the screen, but it wasn't just their picture. It was like silhouette, and there was like live animation and video processing going on. It was way cool. And so it was just like, for me, psychedelic music has this visual element that is always married to the music. Even if you're just listening to it, there's always like this imagery that's in your head. So that's why I picked them. And then the Tame Impala, I mean, it's, to me, it's like a band or a guy, Kevin Parker mainly, where he's using this tradition, if you want to call it that, of psychedelic music and making it relevant by washing it with synthesizers, adding dance beats, sampling, almost using some hip hop sensibility at times. And I just find it really exciting because I love the genre, but it always sounds super dated, but not with Tame Impala.
Who do you got, buddy?
But is it more psychedelic than Inner Speaker?
What is Inner Speaker?
The album before this one.
Right. I see.
Well, you asking the question is answering the question in your opinion. To me, I'm not going to rank them in terms of the psychedelic experience. Just Lonerism for me is like, it has, I think it's more expansive in a lot of ways. I think the songs are better. And so that's why it was my number one as opposed to Inner Speaker.
Well, Lonerism is my favorite of the four, of the, how many ever albums, I guess what is four. But, I saw them before Lonerism came out. I saw them at the church in the basement during this Inner Speaker thing, and I was at that speakeasy at like 21st and Market. I'm trying to remember what it's called. I'm drinking absinthe, and then I show up into this basement, and I just, it was so hot, sweated my ass off. I sweated through my joints. I couldn't even light them, and they put on this crazy psychedelic show, and I saw him multiple times on Lonerism, but I think as far as like a contemporary psychedelic experience, that Inner Speaker stuff was like, just, you know, that was what, you know, where I got my teeth cut with them. So that's why I kind of had to, you know, rub that through.
Yeah, I hear you. I think for someone looking for more of the derivative psychedelic sound, go Inner Speaker. I think for someone looking for more groundbreaking, trailblazing record production, I'm going to go with Lonerism.
And so actually, I have a follow-up for you, Brendan, on that Tame Impala album. And that's when I was listening to this album, Lonerism, it actually sounded like kind of Beatles-y and kind of very song-oriented. And what I heard in many of the other picks that we have here, there's not a whole bunch of like songy going on here. So from that standpoint, that your pick is different than all the other ones, and that this is like, there are like song kind of things there. Is Freddie songs a part of psychedelic music, or is it,
wow,
or is it just the feel and the visuals and the you know, enhancements? Yeah,
I think it's both, you know, because, you know, look what the Beatles did with psychedelia. I mean, they're all about songs, except for maybe Revolution Number 9, you know. But
is that a psychedelic band, or do they make psychedelic albums?
I mean, look, one of the things about one of my picks is Anthem of the Sun. What's that, like five songs, six songs?
Yep.
You know, so as things started getting stretched out and bands started experimenting more, maybe the song for some acts on some records was just a vehicle. You know what I mean? And other bands maybe were more song oriented, you know? So
yeah,
I would
say, but
wouldn't
they be the pop oriented? Wouldn't that be like, you know, pop acts and not psychedelic acts at that point?
It's possible. It's possible. I mean, look, Incense and Peppermints, that's a pop song, but it's definitely psychedelic. And it's probably why you heard it on the radio, because it was a song. It wasn't this experiment. You know, it was a song that was talking about psychedelia. Adam, you had.
Well, you were bringing up Anthem in the Sun, and I didn't want to let it pass by because, I mean, we've talked about the Grateful Dead before, but do you know, like, about the making of that album, Freddie? Like, it's kind of like a partial live
part. Yeah, it's a combination live and studio. That's right.
Yeah, and I have that in my vinyl collection, and it's just like, if you think about, like, when at that time, that's, I mean, the Dead were not really a studio band, but that's kind of a really kind of groundbreaking, kind of cool thing they were doing there. I'd say that's not their best album either, but it's
their second record.
Yep. Third. Oh, no, Axiomoxia came after. Yeah.
Exactly.
The first one's very psychedelic, too.
Because I was going to pick that third one, but I decided on this one.
I like Anthem. It's just kind of a neat a concept. I mean, saying it might not have delivered completely, and I think, you know, they did better material, but it's kind of a cool shot in the dark by those guys.
And so, go back to you, Freddie. How'd you even come up with this pick? These picks. I mean, really, to be honest with you, I've actually never heard of Strawberry Alarm Clock. Never heard of the 13th Floor Elevators. Terrible name. Terrible name.
Yep. Well, yeah.
So how'd you go to past the 12th to the 13th?
Well, because that record is actually the first record to have the word psychedelic in it.
Oh, wow.
That's for that reason alone, basically, I picked it. And
Incense Peppers. Wait. That reason alone. So you don't necessarily like the record?
I didn't say, I mean, yeah, they weren't a hugely popular band. That's what, and you know, their one song, You're Gonna Miss Me, was basically their only semi hit. Mm-hmm. But they have to be spoken about in this conversation. Speaking of, I want to deflect here, change the topic. You know, I went with standard, original, OG psychedelic bands, right? And whereas two of the guys particularly went with some newer groups, which is cool. I'm really surprised that nobody picked the Flaming Lips or the Polyphonic Spree. Really surprised that neither of you younger pups picked either one of those groups.
And he's not talking about me.
No, I'm not. The Flaming Lips in particular, because they were one of the first newer bands to really embrace the psychedelic movement. What do you guys have to say about that? What do you have to say for yourselves?
I was going to say that, Freddie.
I guess I'll go here. I'm a big fan of the Flaming Lips. I've seen them a handful of times. I really haven't talked about them all that much. I don't know. Maybe that they haven't always been psychedelic, and you know, I kind of, you know, right now, it seems like, you know, the Soft Bulletin, Yoshimi at War with the Mystics run with them was, you know, and it was their most popular, probably, aside from the She Don't Use Jelly thing. But yeah. And they've been revisiting that more recently. But I honestly don't have a good answer. I think I just think maybe I don't know. I think I just was getting into the British stuff. I think that I just got lost in the soft machine and that. But no, Flaming Lips definitely deserve a nod on the neo psychedelic. Isn't that's an interesting point, is that a lot of music's from soul to neo soul, like psychedelic to neo psych, like the psychedelic thing is kind of stuck around a little better than like what neo soul lasted 2 years, was boring, and everyone moved on. But like
with the
neo psychedelic, you know, it's not called neo psychedelic, is it? You know, and you get like OCs do like a lot of psychedelic, and it was the second MGMT album, Congratulations, very psychedelic. Almost made my honorable mentions, but I once again went old again. But Brendan, what about you? Why did you not pick any old?
Well, in our tradition of our gentleman's agreement, if you will, of not repeating albums, I already gushed over Yoshimi in a past episode of concept albums. So I didn't want to go there again.
Right on.
But I did love American Head, which I think is their latest album. Because they are so prolific, it's hard to keep track of the Lips.
Right, right.
But and I'm not like a huge Polyphonic Spree person. I don't know them well enough. So I looked over that. And for me, like, I'm just thinking, I was thinking of contemporary because I wanted to think of bands that feel relevant for me. Not that the Lips don't feel relevant, but I was thinking that, and then I had to get in the Brazilian stuff because it's super important to talk about the Brazilian contribution to psychedelic music. So that was kind of how I got there. And to Adam's point, there's way more derivations of psychedelic music than I thought. So, and we'll get into that with the honorable mentions, cause I went intentionally a different route there too, but
you went a different route, Brendan,
In terms of compared to my, compared to my three picks here, my honorable mentions are quite different.
Yeah, man, you're always going a different route. But Freddie, go ahead.
I was just saying, I was basically just playing devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
I saw the reason Polyphonic Spree came up, it was triggered by something Adam said. I actually saw them at the Unitarian Church in the basement.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how they all fit up on that stage, but they did. And it was amazing. And then they faded into obscurity.
Yeah, that's what I wonder, at least about that band, real quick. They had all these people. How are they getting paid? Like, how are they getting paid?
Was it a cult?
It must have been. They must have been, you know, paying in cookies or something.
Right? And St. Vincent was involved with them, right?
He was in there. I think it's a combination of, revolving door membership. Membership is in air quotes for sure. And yeah, I mean, every now and then I'll play for some cookies too. How about that?
Right on.
Sure, me too.
I like the breweries a little better than the cookie stores, frankly.
Nah, I'll take the cookies. Anyway, I want to kind of go to my picks, actually, and kind of give a little background on my picks. So,
cool, please.
When I came to, first of all, I don't know much about psychedelic music. And when I hear the title psychedelic music, it just makes me cringe, like, ooh. That's my first. Then I'm like, wait a second, let's dig into it. Like, there's many topics we talk about where I'm like, I don't know what this is. And my first inclination is to be like, this sucks, but I'll do it anyway.
Yeah, we know.
But the thing is, I learned so much in doing this and, like, you know, exploring. And in this topic, when I was exploring this topic, man, I was just disappointed. It was just disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. There was like no songs in sight. There was like not a song in sight. And I was just like, every song sounds like, you know, about like cookies and pearls and whatnot and incense. And I was just like, I can't relate. I don't have any pearls. I'm not eating a cookie right now. I don't like incense. But then I kept digging, and found some more acts underneath this kind of heading of psychedelic albums, which kind of led me to the Monkees. Dr. John, like, again, I for the longest time, I didn't like this when I first heard it. I didn't like it. And then over the past 20 years now, I've kind of got to know New Orleans a little bit, kind of knowing the culture down there. And I listen to it now. I'm like, oh, snap. Okay, I see what he's trying to do. And now I really actually appreciate it. I really do appreciate it. And then I came to that Gal Gasta album. And that album, I never heard her, never heard it. And I'm a huge Ellis Regina fan, and this totally reminded me of Ellis Regina, but with some like more off kilter kind of instrumentation and just randomness going on. And it's definitely going to be in regular rotation for me. And it kind of actually led me down to kind of explore the Tropicália movement here in Brazil.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know much about it because I, you know, just kind of researched it for this episode, but you know, there's a lot of different albums coming out of this with, was it Os Mutantes? They had an album that was really great. You know, a couple, Gilberto Gil. I mean, it's just so much good music. And actually, you know, that Tropicália kind of psychedelia thing kind of influenced so many other artists that we know today with David Byrne and Beck and Bird and the Bee. I think Beck's album Mutations was a little bit of tribute to Os Mutantes and
there was a song called Tropicália on it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, the whole Brazilian thing is just a whole new world that I just literally touched the surface of with that Gal Gasta album. And I just definitely recommend everybody to listen to that album because it it'll be in your regular rotation as well for sure. But yeah. So anyway, that's my Adam. What do you got, man?
Now, sometimes I like busting your stones about your kind of neophyte, you know, your Lincoln Drive wide taste in music. But I think it also provides for you can kind of help, you know, like a listener kind of find a way to open a door to something they don't know in the same respect, instead of being some like jaded nerd like myself that's like, oh, you don't know that, you don't know what to do with the deeper cuts. So I'm like, it is kind of it's a good take to have sometimes, just to kind of you might think this is dumb and stupid like me, but hey, I found like a couple things I like in it, and that sometimes is just all you need, is a little edge into the door.
Brandon, what do you got, man?
Well, yeah, Aaron, I want to pick apart this a little bit. And so first off, like, I'm so glad you put the Dr. John pick on there, because I had just stupidly never thought about him in terms of psychedelia, and you put that on there and it just clicked for me. I was like, oh yeah, of course,
totally.
It's like Night Trippers. Yeah. It's just like, that was a total moment, and the timing is there. So I think that's great. So what I want to figure out is, I'm getting shades of a previous episode when we talked about jam bands, of like your sentiments towards this genre. So I know Freddie's played everything under the sun. So I know Freddie's played psychedelic music. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Adam has played psychedelic music before. I've played, and during non-pandemic times, I'm in a band that plays psychedelic music regularly. Aaron, I'm assuming you've never really kind of jumped into this from a musical standpoint, from a playing standpoint.
Well, I don't know. I'll give you a solid I don't know. So Adam and I were in a band for a number of years, and so Adam could talk more exactly if we were actually doing psychedelic music. Maybe the other people in the band were, and I wasn't.
That can have good results.
You sure like to play the choir boy, I'll tell you that. You're like, oh, you guys ate that? Oh my God. Yeah, no, you did.
Gospel, that's a whole nother pot, gospel music.
I don't know who you're trying to hide it from.
I mean, the other part is, actually, before Adam was in the band, the band we used to be in, it was called Alien Red, and we had a gentleman. Spotify. Yeah, it's on Spotify. We had a gentleman in the band named Chris, and AKA Fetus. And when we were playing, he would bring these songs, and they were just off the wall. I mean,
originals?
Originals, off the wall. And I had no context for them. They could definitely have been psychedelic or just like avant-garde, like randomness. And I didn't understand it all, but I just tried to do is just throw myself into it to see if I learned something. And I think I have. I think I really did. Adam, what do you got, man?
I think I can answer this a little bit. The Alien Red sound was kind of like a Stevie Wonder meets the Red Hot Chili Peppers type of thing. But we were, and it was the bar band days. We would have to play for 3 hours. So we had a huge list of songs, originals and covers. And sometimes we'd play like this Chuck's Farm Festival out in State College, where we would always have to be like the 4 o'clock band, but they'd always run late, and we'd always get like the sunset 9 PM set on the main stage. Like every time we play, we're supposed to play at 4. I mean, we get this great, like huge block, and we'd explore the space a little bit. So in the psychedelic spirit, we were exploring a little bit, maybe got there a little bit, but like none of the stuff we ever did was like more what you could call like a rank and file.
I will say though that the audience appreciated as psychedelic music. I'll tell you that.
Well, they sure did, especially the later than I got.
Yeah, definitely. Freddie, did you have something?
Not really. I mean, to add to that, one other band that we haven't, nobody had mentioned, and Adam, I know you're a big fan, is Phish. Mm-hmm. Are they a psychedelic band, or are they just a jam band? Where do you draw the line?
I mean, they participate in psychedelia, but I think more of our choices, even that Grateful Dead choice at the time, they were a straight up psychedelic band. But like the Phish kind of borrow from Zappa, from the Allmans, from the, you know, more of the traditional Grateful Dead and some of the more psychedelic elements. And I've seen a bunch of shows where they do get their type two
out there
psychedelic, but they're more like a King Gizzard doing a straight up psychedelic album, or the VOCs are like straight up psychedelia. even Flaming Lips, which is, it seems like a pretty glaring omission the more we talk.
Yeah, that's actually something I wanted to say, though, is it follow up on Freddie's take is that, you know, the jam bands, we did episode with prog rock, we did concept albums. And to me, as, you know, someone that doesn't totally live in those areas all day long or whatever, it all kind of blends together. I mean, it's just like the same thing, different day or whatever. So it's just, it's all the same. Like, there's no songs. It's like terrible vocals. And it's just like stretched out songs. So it's kind of hard for me to kind of distinguish between the genre. I know there is, because, you know, once you get deeper into it, you know, you kind of start to pick out some things. But all in all, like, I'm thinking, like, how is, like, Yes not part of this, or even Genesis for that matter, or no. Like, you know, but on the surface, right? Early Genesis, I'm not talking about, you know, but like on the surface, no, like,
nah.
Well, why not?
Because the prog rock and psychedelia are two separate things.
But why?
We've talked about it. The classical
influence. Answers. Yes. Answer the man.
There's the classical. There's the classical influence from the prog. The very structured parts. Psychedelic lets things breathe a little more. Lets it kind of write out there. Prog may sound like long and drawn out, but it's a lot more calculated. And that okay. that is the difference.
That's a lot less drugs going there. That's just weirdo nerdy stuff.
It feels like when you don't feel like digging any deeper, you just say drugs. You're like, oh, I don't get it, drugs.
Yeah, bro.
It's like it's like your release valve. You're like, oh, I don't know, drugs.
Meta, come on, give us that knowledge, buddy.
Well, that was part of my original question to you, was about your experience playing some of this music, because if you had any experiences playing it, I think it would resonate much more in terms of the differences. Yeah, because to me, the three genres you just named couldn't be more different. I think that there are elements of stretching out in all of them, but jam bands, I think, are known for that, whereas prog, it's like it's stretching out, but it's more of a composed type of thing. And then psychedelic rock, if we're going to talk about psychedelic rock, that is, has just like, which I think is the kind of the core of what most of us went to with these picks.
Right.
Like, that's on a different planet. Like, it's all about like the colors. It's all about the effects. It's all about manipulation of the sound. And I think there's generally, with the good stuff anyway, there's always a song under there, but it's almost like you take a song and then you see how you can expand the color palette sonically to turn it into something that's really interesting. That's my take on it anyway.
And so to follow up on something you said earlier, so how the life, the visuals are a part of the psychedelic scene. So it's just, what is it? Convergent evolution in terms of jam bands using all the lights and stuff, and having and then the prog rocks having all the lights and stuff, and even like exploring the different sound palettes. So it's just convergent evolution. They're not the same. They just kind of got to the same spot because, you know.
Well, no, they share similar elements. They're not at the same spot.
Right.
That's where you're generalizing.
Right.
Soul shows use lights, or they use no lights? Or they just turn off all the lights?
Who does?
Neo Soul shows. Do they use lights or no lights?
Oh, man, it's no lights, man. It's the
dimmer. Lights off. Yeah, just completely off. Keep it sit down. There in the dark.
And red light in the basement.
Put the dimmer down, buddy.
You're just like, oh, why do people want a good-looking show? Why would they want that? Oh, my God, they're all the same. They all turn on lights.
Yeah, but the lights are, you know, similar shades. Interesting.
Well, these are all tools for sure, but just using broad terms like lights and effects, that's like, it's such an umbrella term. Like, if you want to talk specifics, like, to me, psychedelic rock specifically, like, there's a specific guitar sound and it's got to have fuzz on it. Like, you got to have different types of fuzz pedals that you throw on there. It's got to have specific, there's sort of a bandwidth of like synthesizer sounds that work on it. Whereas on the other end of it, if I hear a certain synth, immediately for me, I'm triggered to like a prog rock type of arena. So it's like there are palettes within these genres that I think are important because you're painting with.
Yeah, I will say, guys, This is very educational. I know I'm kind of, you know, twisting you guys a little bit here. But
we'll twist right back there, corn teeth.
That's kind of what I do here. That's kind of what I do, all right?
You bring in the neophyte's perspective, and you need that, like I said before.
Yeah. But I actually do want to explore, maybe we'll throw this up on our website, you know, some, what are the bona fides of each genre, like the prog concept? It needs a cowbell.
You need a syllabi for this?
Yeah, I think it will help me and the listeners to kind of like, prepare for the test. You know what I mean?
Man, this test is going to be hard. There's a lot of stuff.
Sure is, guy. Sure is.
We haven't had one yet, so this is is it a cumulative test? Open book?
I'm going to fail. But but that's why I need my little my notes. But we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with some more honorable mentions. So hold on. And we are back. And so we had a lot of great conversation about how I am an idiot. I appreciate that from the guys.
A lovable idiot. You're a very lovable idiot. So don't sell yourself short.
but yeah, I love to kind of stick it to them, knowing that, you know, it's fun. And so, but we're going to give it a little more and give you some honorable mentions. And I'm going to go with my guy, the podiatrist, first. What are your honorable mentions, buddy?
All right. Actually, fortunately enough, I my honorable mentions are both old, and we ended up talking a lot about the newer psychedelia, so I'm kind of happy that I picked old here. But my first honorable mention is from 1968, and it's A Friend by the Beach Boys. Which is kind of their take on psychedelia. Mike Love was on he was gone for like 9 months on some, religious retreat or something. And they kind of made this psychedelic album without him. And I think it's really, really enjoyable, fun album, but it's kind of one where like they kind of missed their window with it. And I don't know, that you could have a whole pod on like the Beach Boys from 68 to 72 and how interesting it was. But this one kind of got washed over a little bit, so Friends as there. And my other one is the contemporaries of the Soft Machine as the torchbearers of the British psychedelic scene, the Pink Floyd. They had a "the" at the beginning, and this is their first album, Piper at the Gates of Dawn. Which was kind of like, I mean, Pink Floyd turned into something else, but this was like Syd Barrett's baby right here, and he kind of had this really cool flavor, you know, psychedelic flavor, and it was him and Robert Wyatt and Soft Machine, that kind of ruled that scene. And they're talking about, like, I read like Nick Mason's book, and they were just talking about like the early shows they put on, like it's kind of like a warehousey thing, and they were trying stuff out with lights and everything, and it's just I'm like, I gotta take a nod to one of the originals here. Because Pink Floyd gets talked about forever, but like the Syd Barrett band is almost a different band, and you know, quick nod before he, you know, lost his cookies and whatnot. So Piper the Gates of Dawn.
And you said they kind of turned into something else. What did they turn into?
Not quite a prog band, but
not helping, or you're only helping Aaron's point from earlier.
not really.
Well, yeah, no.
Pink Floyd is the perfect example of being kind of on both in both camps, psych and prog.
Well, I think they got a little more away from the psych without Syd Barrett. The songwriter changed, the lengths of the songs changed, the whole palette of what they were doing changed. It's like they weren't. I mean, besides maybe Astronomy Domine, they didn't really. I mean, it's not like a bunch of the stuff from Piper at the Gates of Dawn survived to any other era of Pink Floyd. So I'm not reaffirming Aaron's point at all. No. Zero.
Wait, one of their big hits, Money, right? It was in what, like 612 or something?
7-4.
7-4. Yeah. So that doesn't sound like psychedelic to me, actually.
Yeah. I think we talked about it like in Prague. They didn't, they like somehow Pink Floyd like avoided falling into any kind of like a label as like a pejorative, you know, how it's been like, oh, it's another prog band, but like Pink Floyd just somehow avoided all of that. I don't know how.
Guitars, buddy. Guitars.
Well, Gilmore can play a nice guitar.
Yeah. Freddie, man, what do you got for your honorable mentions?
Okay, so one of my honorable mentions is the Rolling Stones, their Satanic Majesty's Request.
Yeah.
A direct response by them to Sgt. Pepper. But it wasn't really as successful. But in retrospect, I think a lot of people are going back and giving it newfound praise. She's a Rainbow, 2,000 Light Years from Home. Pretty good songs.
Oh, absolutely.
In retrospect. You know what I mean? So this was, and oddly enough, after this, the Stones were like, the heck with this. Let's get back into the blues.
And then their five best albums in a row. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Let's just go more alcohol and coke.
Yeah. Then LSD.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then my other honorable mention is Jefferson Airplane, Surrealistic Pillow. She's 10 feet tall. Which is the first album with Grace Slick and Spencer Dryden. And it's got a lot of great songs on it. Somebody to Love, White Rabbit, Embryonic Journey. I mean, kind of, they were sort of at the spearhead of the San Francisco, you know, psychedelic Summer of Love era. Even though this came out in 68, it was recorded in 67. So those are my two honorable mentions.
Yeah, that Jefferson Airplane album definitely feels psychedelic to me.
Classic.
I think we did that White Rabbit album in high school, in like a high school play or something. And we were all like, what is this?
Yep, from the same album.
Yeah. Brendan, what do you got, man?
Right, so with my main picks, I kind of kept strictly psychedelic rock because I actually thought that was our topic when it was a first assigned, and then I looked and it was just psychedelic in general. So then I was like, well, I really need to get in my love for psychedelic soul music too, because that's such an awesome merging of like some of my favorite type of stuff, like soul music with just like trippy things happening. So my first pick is Cloud Nine from The Temptations, came out in 1969. Which I think to me was like one of the coolest offshoots that the Temptations did in terms of getting a hold of a sound. One of our past episodes, less successful. I'm not going to go there, even though I just did. And then my other honorable mention is someone who I wasn't sure how to fit into an episode until now, but I went with Baby Huey. Which is 1971 record, the only one, I believe, the Baby Huey Story, the living legend. And it's like, you listen to this, and he is just like, he's tripping out up there on the mic, like throwing all sorts of weird delays on there, and it's just way cool. So those are my two psychedelic soul honorable mentions.
Mm. Right on.
Interesting, sir. Interesting. And actually, a follow-up question for you, not on these records, but so is the Fifth Dimension, are they psychedelic soul?
That's a good question. Yeah, I would think so. I think so.
What do you think, Freddie? You gave me a weird look.
I think the Fifth Dimension, they were a pop band, but whoever was producing their records had very good taste in choosing songs, because you know all the all the hits that they had. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't write their own songs. Mm-hmm. I don't think.
No.
You know what I mean? So whoever did A&R and or produce them was a genius.
Yeah, that's I thought about them actually for this pick today, and I didn't pick them because, well, like it seemed like all, they had all the like the packaging of a psychedelic band, but when you actually listen to them, I'm like, nah, this just sounds they're like not good.
It was a manufactured, commercial psychedelic.
Yeah, it was like the Monkees, but worse.
Oh, before we get too far.
The Monkee, but before, different.
Before we get to, because we didn't really get to it before, before we get to your honorable mentions, Aaron, Head is a really cool, really cool album.
It is really good. It is really good.
And it's one that's always been kind of on my short list, to throw around, because it's just like, it does defy all your conventional thoughts of the
Monkees. It breaks a lot of rules, man.
And it's just kind of a, it's got to be, I think, I don't know for sure. It's got to be like the album, the guys are like, we're so freaking sick of these freaking Neil Diamond songs. Can we just do some fun stuff of our own? You know, I mean, it just, you know, they're all good musicians. That was like Mickey Dolenz and maybe it was Davy Jones. Like they redid Nielsen's The Point.
Yep.
Well, that was kind of thing. I mean, they're accomplished musicians. They're probably just thrown in a box. You're like, yeah, let's get weird, for a little bit. It's one of those that like no one ever thinks of Head. So I was happy you picked that.
Yeah, it is a really cool record. And actually, one of my things it's a really great record. Really great record. But I'm going to go to my honorable mention picks. And so one of my honorable mentions is 1967 Strange Days by, of course, The Doors. When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers. Who I think is a psychedelic band, but who knows? Who knows? Does anybody know? I think they are.
I don't disagree.
Okay.
Especially that album. I remember being in a friend of mine's house and being up in his brother's room and that record was playing. Yeah, I'll buy that.
Yeah.
It was part of my soundtrack.
Oddly enough, I saw it on like a whole bunch of lists and I was like, this is cool. Like I really love People Are Strange as a song, which kind of defeats the whole like psychedelic purpose for me at least. But then I listened to Horse Latitudes and I was like, yeah, no, okay, cool. This is part of this thing, because that song is weird and stupid. Next thing, Odyssey and Oracle, The Zombies, 1968. I don't think this is necessarily a psychedelic album, but the packaging gives me that psychedelic feel, so that's why I throw it in there. And I think it's amazing. So I just wanted to talk about this album specifically, bring it up so people can continually go back to it and listen to it.
Was this big? Was that big at the time? I feel like it's been a revisionist history kind of album. And it's really, I mean, when I first heard it, I'm like, wow, this had to be the biggest album of the time. But like, then you find out you're like, nope. Freddie? No, it wasn't big.
They broke up, right?
Yeah, it was their second album. But, look. Back then, everybody, after Sgt. Pepper's came out, every band was doing their psychedelic concept record.
Right.
And,
getting a dollar.
This group, this album, the Stones, Kinks, was it Village Green Preservation Site? You know what I mean? Every single band had their version. And I think that's what happened with this one. I could be wrong.
Just fell into the ether amongst all the other, lost in the shuffle, kind of.
Yeah, it's possible. Let's see and who knows? Maybe they were recording this at the same time the Beatles were recording Sgt. Pepper's. I could be wrong.
I actually believe they broke up before this record came out.
Oh, wow.
Then it became a hit. But yeah, one of the other things, in researching for this topic, I learned that there were so many bands at that particular time back then that released records that sounded very psychedelic oriented. There are just so many other bands out there that had, like, from that period of, like, you know, 66, 67, 68, 69, that are just, there's so many different bands that nobody even knows about. Adam, what do you got, man?
Well, just thinking about it, because, you know, the evolution of rock and roll. I mean, you know, it was just, the Buddy Holly-ish, you know, Roy Orbison-y thing. And then, like, Bob Dylan kind of took became folky a little bit. You know, if you kind of watch, like, Walk Hard, and you just watch, like, the Dewey Cox character, that's kind of like how, like, and then just after the folk, the psychedelic was the next thing that everybody jumped on, really.
Wasn't everybody.
So it was just kind of, that was just a pattern at the time. And it was really only this, like, the second or third shift for rock and roll music. So, like, everyone was trying to, like, cement. I mean, you could technically say Hendrix and Cream were psychedelic, really. Oh, especially if we're talking, like,
yeah.
And so it's just like, and we didn't even bring them up till now. You know, this is like, it was just, everything was psychedelic then. And saying, and now in the contemporary times, so it's more of the idea of it has kind of stuck around a lot longer than some other. It's like, you're not seeing a lot of prog now or anything, you know, but yeah. The psychedelics you still see. You know.
Well, and actually, because everything was psychedelic then, like, they, you know, the Doors were, everything was. But today, you know, kind of what Brendan was saying is, like, you know, for today's bands, you kind of codify it. And now it's like, all right, if you got that fuzz, then you're fine. You know, psychedelic. Or if you got this Farfisa, whatever, you're
Univibe. Like, Univibe is very psychedelic.
Or Univibe, you know what I mean? Like, kind of codify it now, where it's like, not everything is psychedelic. Even if it was back then, and you put some tie-dye or the cover that you were psychedelic, you know what I mean?
I wonder if how hard it was to, like, not do psychedelic then, like, go, go against the grain. Yeah.
Well, then you were Motown, right? Or Stax or something.
Yeah.
Adam, you got any additional final notes for us here, buddy?
Oh boy, I don't know. I feel like we could go another 25 hours on this one. I think more. If to sum up, it seems like psychedelic is a larger umbrella than we thought, and a lot more present just in kind of, you know, kind of permeating into the, you know, in the musical society, so to speak. But I think why it has is because there's such an openness to it, and there's it's not as hard to, like, reinterpret it yourself. You can really add a lot of stuff under it, and I think that you know, like, Tame Impala has really, or, you know, Kevin Parker himself has really, you know, run with that and done really well with that.
All right, guys.
It was a really awkward pause, but I'm like, I was starting, like, I couldn't, I was trying to get more words out, but I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I think that's it. But it was
just slid right into that parking spot.
That is like, yeah. Yeah, it's one of those, you just hit the parallel on the first time, and you're like, yep, all right. You know, I could straighten it out just to, you know, to lengthen it, but I don't have to.
I'm in the spot.
Yeah. I'm not going to mess with this, yeah.
On that note, guys, on behalf of Freddie Welbetti, Bourbon, Adam, Blonde, Selick, the podiatrist, Zelinski, Brendan, Patty, Meta, McGeehan, I am Aaron Brown, Corn Teeth, a.k.a. the John Stockton of Podcast. And we'll be back next week with another episode for your ears. So take care.
Right, fiction.